Welcome to episode 50. I'm Stuart McCullough, I'm the CEO of VHAA. And starting with an announcement this week in terms of our upcoming regional forums. We'll be in the Grampians region and at Jerawarra Health on Friday the 2nd of March, the Loddon Mallee region at Maryborough District Hospital on Monday the 5th of March, the Hume region at Benalla Health on the 6th of March, and the Gippsland region, we'll be heading to the La Trobe Hospital on the 8th of March. We still have one more date to book in for the Barwon South West Health region, and we anticipate doing that shortly. In terms of enterprise bargaining and starting with community health, we're continuing to bargain for the various agreements that have concluded for community health. And in particular, we met with the allied health professionals to continue bargaining on the 13th of February and with the medical scientists on the 15th of February. With respect to our public health service members, the doctors' bargaining has concluded and drafting has now been finalised for the two agreements. We are now awaiting government approval. On the 14th of February, we attended a statewide HMO managers meeting to discuss the matters that are specific to doctors in training. We are currently preparing implementation material as well as ballot material, and we look forward to conducting EBA forums for those agreements in the not too distant future. Also on the issue of EBA forums, we're currently looking to find a date for the medical scientists EBA forum. In the first instance, we may seek to do that as a streaming event. That will ensure that people can participate no matter where they are within the state. With respect to bargaining in the general dentists and specialist dentists, we met with Professionals Australia on the 13th of February. And in terms of our other activities, we attended a diversity in healthcare workforce working group on the 9th of February. That's a working group that is concentrating on initiatives with respect to Indigenous employment and disability employment within the Victorian healthcare sector. If anyone does have a good news story with regards to their initiatives, particularly with regards to the disability sector, we would love to hear from you. As always, all our activities are summarised on the app, and that's it for this week's Industrial Roundup. Welcome to the weekly update, where we go in depth with a particular subject. And joining me for this week's discussion is Senior Workplace Relations Advisor Daniel Pullen. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you, Stuart.
Daniel, would you be good enough to reveal the clue which will hint at the subject matter that we'll be discussing today?
Yes.
And for the benefit of those people who are listening to this podcast rather than watching, could you describe the objects that are the clue?
It's a small box of Kellogg's Special K and a CD by Liszt, Sonata in B minor.
As performed by Clifford Curzon, really one of the champions of Liszt. On the basis of those particular clues, what would you say that the subject for our discussion today will be?
It would have to be special lists.
Daniel, it's almost as though you've prepared for this podcast. Specialists. So that takes us to today's discussion. For those people who watched last week, we did talk about doctors in training, and there is some overlap between last week's podcast and this week's podcast. But as is often the case with the new enterprise agreement and heads of agreement, we'll start again with wages. So could you remind people who may not have watched last week what the outcome for wages for doctors, including medical specialists, will be?
Of course. So all doctors will receive wages and allowance increases of 3% per annum from 1 January 2018, 2019, 2020 and 2021.
I'm sensing a pattern.
There is a pattern. In addition to a further 6% wage increase that will be applicable from the 1st of January 2018.
So just in terms of that 6% increase, I think in part that was a response to the AMA's claim for interstate parity, notwithstanding that they didn't identify which state as such, but how will that work?
So with respect to interstate parity, but in addition to that, it's also to recognise that doctors haven't experienced a salary uplift since 2015.
Okay, so we have a gap to fill from our last increase in 2015 through to 2018.
Correct. So the 6% increase will only apply to the wages at the rear of the agreement. It will not apply to allowances such as CME. So CME and other allowances will increase by 3% on the 1st of January 2018. Wages will increase by 9%.
So whilst we're discussing allowances, I think one of the key changes for this new agreement concerns shift penalty payments. What's happening with regards to shift penalty payments?
Correct. So there's been some amendments to the existing shift penalty provisions. That is the increase of the existing afternoon shift penalty from Monday to Friday from 12.5% that is now 25%. We have now introduced a new penalty for night shift, noting that there had been a gap with respect to night shift under the previous agreement.
And I think it was almost unprecedented that there was no penalty for work after midnight.
Correct. So we've agreed to a shift penalty of 75% for work performed between midnight and 7 a.m. from Monday through to Saturday, and a penalty of 100% for work performed between midnight and 7 a.m. on Sundays.
I'm sure people want to know just in terms of how those are to be applied, particularly for specialists who are receiving a higher level of pay than the one prescribed by the agreement. Are these shift penalty payments absorbable?
They are absorbable, and we will discuss the review of actual rates and other conditions shortly.
So speaking of absorption, one thing that did absorb a lot of time during our discussions was the CME allowance. Could you describe the changes with respect to the CME allowance?
Of course. The parties agreed that CME can be accessed for the purposes of sabbatical leave, where the sabbatical leave meets the definitions as prescribed in the agreement.
So it still needs to meet the definition of CME?
Correct. CME can also be utilised for reimbursement of registration fees that are associated with professional societies, where that professional society is a recognised area of medical practice that the doctor is credentialed and practising.
Okay, so there's got to be a clear connection and relevance.
Correct. Lastly, the parties agree that where a doctor can demonstrate that they were the primary carer of a child during a period of CME, they'd be able to claim for necessary childcare, and that is capped at $200 per day.
So just on that last point, I mean, that's a really interesting thing and was a theme for our discussions with respect to dealing with issues of access that are associated with gender in particular, and how do we ensure that those people on parental leave aren't disadvantaged?
Look, it does. You know, that was definitely a theme across both the Doctors in Training and the Medical Specialist Agreement on how to address some of the inequalities that exist in the existing agreement, especially for females that are in the workforce and returning from parental leave.
Very much a process of catching up.
Yes.
Just in terms of the process for CME, what are the procedural changes for CME?
So the doctors can now accumulate their annual CME cap for up to 3 years, where they restricted from being able to use their CME for specific circumstances during their CME year.
So just to be clear, that's for a limited number of reasons, not for any reason.
Correct. So this would include parental and caring responsibilities. This is a topic that would be the subject of a specific podcast in coming weeks.
Okay, so we'll do an in-depth podcast on that separately.
Correct. In addition, it was agreed that reimbursement of CME expenses can now occur beyond 3 months from when the cost was incurred. But no later than 3 months after the end of the financial year in which it occurred.
So doctors have, in effect, until the 30th of September to submit their CME expenses?
Correct.
And keeping on the topic of timing and the processing of payments, I understand that there have been some changes under the agreement as to how claims can be assessed and the timeframes for their assessment.
The parties have agreed on a revised process that facilitates a 30-day assessment period that occurs immediately following the receipt of a claim from the doctor for reimbursement. And this period is available to the health service to assess the claim, determine whether any items are inconsistent with the CME clause, and correspond with the doctor advising him of the outcome in writing.
I know one of the things that is on the minds of administrators is that issue of claims that are incomplete.
Correct.
So just in terms of what happens if somebody submits a compliant claim?
So if someone submits a compliant claim, the health service is provided 45 days from receipt of the compliant claim to process the reimbursement to the doctor.
So that 45-day limit is in fact an increase in the number of days available to health services to undertake that work?
Correct. Currently, the health services are provided 30 days to process the claim.
So they have an additional 15 days?
Correct.
But there are some prescribed steps to undertake within that period of time?
Yes.
So if a health service wants to inquire about a claim submitted by a doctor for CME, what guidance does the agreement provide in that circumstance?
So the agreement provides that a health service must advise the doctor in writing of their intention to reject the claim either in part or in full in the initial 30 days and provide the doctor an opportunity to respond.
And when does the health service then make a determination on the claim following that inquiry?
So following the inquiry, the health service must advise the doctor within 7 days from receipt of the response to the inquiry.
So it sounds like CME would be a suitable subject for a podcast, given that it occupies, it's one of those items, I think it was described as punching above its weight. So we'll do a separate podcast on that in future weeks.
Correct.
And moving on from CME and the changes with regards to that, what changes were agreed with respect to variations to fractional hours and work patterns?
So part of the employer logger claim was to achieve commonality across the sector for procedural matters, which involved the insertion of common clauses to address consultation and redundancy. This resulted in a change to how fractional work hours and patterns of work can be varied. It was agreed that health services must consult with a fractional doctor where their roster or hours of work may be changed, noting that consultation must occur prior to a definite decision being made.
So just in terms of those principles, they connect very much also to the mandatory provisions of the Fair Work Act requiring changes to hours of work?
Correct. And there's been additional changes as well to maximum and fixed term contracts.
So I understand that in terms of maximum and fixed term contracts, that these can now only really be utilised in specific circumstances.
That's correct. The agreement provides that fixed term employment can only be used for genuine fixed term needs.
So those words sound quite familiar. In fact, they sound like the words that are in every other agreement that we have.
They are.
So in terms of the utilisation of that term, genuine fixed term requirements or genuine need, is that term defined at all?
Look, it is. The genuine fixed term needs are defined in the agreement as these matters but aren't limited to these matters as a replacement for a doctor on a period of absence, undertaking a specific task which is funded for a specific period, and for the first year of employment with the hospital. In addition, fixed term contracts can be used where a doctor's employment is reliant on the appropriate immigration visas, or if the doctor holds limited registration to practice as a medical practitioner, or where conditions have been placed on a doctor's registration.
Do these changes interrupt or disrupt existing fixed-term contracts or maximum-term contracts?
They don't. So the inclusion of this clause does not disturb or disrupt any of the existing contracts of employment that may have a maximum or fixed term that are in effect at the commencement of this agreement.
So where people are utilising fixed or maximum terms in a circumstance where it doesn't meet that definition of genuine, those would in effect be phased out as those contracts came to an end?
Correct.
And were there amendments to clinical support time, which I know is a subject that's important to many, were there changes to those provisions?
Look, yes, there was. It was agreed where specialists have managerial or supervisory responsibilities greater than 20% of their ordinary duties, that this does not reduce the access to clinical support time for other specialists in the unit. Additionally, a doctor's workload, including any emerging work, must be contemplated when determining the quantum of clinical support time afforded to a doctor.
So members might recall that one of the claims made by the AMA was for the codification of a manager's allowance. Where did that claim end up?
So the parties weren't able to finalise the rate that would apply to a manager's allowance, but we were able to agree on a set of descriptors. And these descriptors reflect duties that were agreed between the parties that would reflect work performed by roles such as a unit head through to program director and senior leadership within the medical workforce. The parties, as I mentioned, were unable to agree on rates that would be absorbable, but the parties were able to agree on absorption principles. But the parties will continue to work on assigning rates to these descriptors through the Service Delivery Partnership Plan Working Group.
So there's a bit of work to do with regards to that during the life of the agreement. On the same subject, I understand that there's also further work to do with regards to specialist rates.
Correct. It's been agreed that a joint working party that is developed through the Service Delivery Partnership Plan Working Group will jointly undertake a review of the actual rates of pay and conditions paid to specialists against the rates of pay and conditions that are prescribed in the agreement, with a view to identify conditions that are more accurately reflect current practice and a method to move current paper rates to actual rates for specialists.
It's an interesting one in the sense that there is no other agreement like it, in the sense that we have a collective agreement where in real terms there are a range of outcomes that are not necessarily collective.
Correct.
The other thing that occupied a bit of time concerned the savings provisions and how to deal with that. We had an existing provision, Clause 6 of the expired agreement, that in effect stated that expired certified agreements would continue to operate to some extent, and there were certain limitations around that, but there were a range of disputes as to exactly what was saved. What's the process under the new agreement to deal with those issues?
So it was agreed between the parties from the outset that the existing Clause 6 for savings is not applied consistently across the industry.
So does that mean that the existing obligations will alter?
They won't. So it's important to note that the existing obligations that apply under the current agreement are not changing.
So the bar remains where it is. What we're trying to do is actually put some transparency about what the bar is. So just in terms of the work that's to be done, what is that work?
So it's been agreed between the parties that we'll continue to review those pre-existing entitlements that applied in those collective or enterprise agreements that applied immediately before the 2013 specialist agreement. We'll engage with health services and continue to work through that savings work throughout the life of the current agreement.
So the parties are going to continue to work on the savings provision over the life of the agreement?
Correct.
And in terms of the scope of what has changed, we're just confirming that the scope of what is saved has not altered.
Correct.
So, Daniel, that brings us to the end of our podcast. As we've flagged, we are going to do some specialised podcasts on particular clauses over the coming weeks and months. I do want to say a big thank you to everyone who participated in the reference group for both the specialists and the doctors and training agreement. The responsiveness and the input of the people on those reference groups was extraordinarily helpful in concluding the agreement. The other thing I meant to mention, Daniel, is that this is actually the 50th podcast that we have done. So I've prepared a hat for you.
Thank you very much.
You can put that on if you wish. And I think it's time for us to rejoin the celebrations with the studio audience. Special K.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining me, Daniel.
Thank you, Stuart. You want some?
No, thanks.